You're listening to Inside the Tech Ecosystem, a podcast that brings you fun and insightful topics about tech and its ecosystem in Nigeria. And I'm your host, Emmanuel, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chuka. Chuka, how are you doing?
Hey, guys. Hey, people. I'm good. Very nice to hear your voice again on this show, even though I hear it every other week. Frankly, I'm sick of it, but yeah, my co-host, so I have to endure. How have you been, my guy?
I have been good. I've been all right. It's been such a long time that we've recorded, and
we say this every episode.
Not every episode. Every time we've taken like a long break, we do this. Yeah, but it's nice to be back.
Happy New Year to you and yours.
that's right. This is actually a new year, and even if this is March, Happy New Year to all our listeners and all our fans.
Yeah. Said all our fans. Oh my God. I mean,
they are fans. Let me think about it, right? So in this episode, we are really excited because we have brought a very special guest.
What a superstar.
Yes, a superstar. So his name is Ebovi Wali. Ebovi Wali is a tech entrepreneur, and he's here, and we're going to talk about very, very interesting things in the ecosystem. We are going to be talking about startups, valuations, and basically everything you hear when a company raises money and it's published on all the big tech media. So Ebovi, welcome. Would you like to tell us more about yourself and how you got into tech?
Sure. Man, I feel so honored to be here. Like, this is actually like my first podcast recording. I've been running from podcast recordings. I've been running from guest features. But last year, towards the end of last year, I started taking guest features. So I think I spoke at like two conferences last year. One was actually a cello blockchain conference, and it was very like impromptu. So I was just there in the audience, and they were like, "Abovi is here. You should come and talk." And I was like, "Hey, God!"
You see, we said superstar. We said superstar.
I went on stage to chat, and then the second one was actually planned. Was a Nigerian Innovation Summit. So that held at Lagos Oriental Hotel. I was just talking about VC. Funny enough, I'm super happy to be here. Like. Thank you so much for inviting me, Manuel. My journey. So I like to call myself a tech entrepreneur because, like, you know, everything is business, right? I've actually been doing like business, as far back as when I was like 15, right? So my first stint with business actually started when my mom was into network marketing. I didn't know how many of our moms were into network marketing back then. All these Tianxi, Unid. There's so many of them all over the country then. So that was like my first stint to marketing and business.
I've never heard of network marketing before. What is that? Sorry.
You haven't heard of network marketing. So it's when some foreign guys bring products to the country.
Okay.
Like, let's say these health drinks, coffee, these things that
like Oriflame, I know this.
Oriflame, cosmetics, and then they have this viral marketing plan that tell you bring four people. Like pyramid scheme, basically.
Oh man!
Yeah.
Wow.
I feel like all of these things, like, you know, we're the beauty of businesses, you know, African, you know, businesses back then, right? You know, but now it's just a whole lot different. It's just the trade money all over the place, like expensive marketing budgets, right? Although like market has really cooled down, right? I don't know what we'll talk about. So everybody's resting.
You know, but is Bobby trying to tell us something?
but it's interesting because, you know, people then were able to achieve so much success with marketing. I feel like even more success than currently how most tech businesses are marketing, right? So that was my first thing to marketing. So my mom had these products in the house, and myself and my brother, we just said one day that we're going to take it out in the street and market them. So we went from door to door in the whole estate and sold everything in 1 week. It was so interesting. We sold like 5 million naira worth of products in 1 week. And I was like, okay, this is how easy it is to make money. And I was like 15. all you just need to do is find money from everybody's pockets, right?
Wow.
It was so interesting.
Yo, did you get paid immediately? Or it was like...
Everybody was paying cash. Everybody was paying cash. Also, people were like, oh, I'll pay at the end of the month. End of the month, right? But we get on the product. Once they have the product, they're definitely going to pay for it. So it was very interesting. Mm-hmm. So since then, I just knew that business was for me, right? Because tech is also a business. I stumbled on it as well, too. So I just knew that business was for me. I was into like social activism as well very early then, organizing conferences back in Port Harcourt, events. I was very involved with the sustainable development goals back then, growing up. So organizing conferences, organizing talks, then I got into university. I think that was actually my first real tech experience. I don't know if you remember, but we actually launched this e-commerce app. So back in university, Covenant University, then we had this big problem where, because of how restricted the school is, right? So it was difficult to like shop for items outside, right? Shop for items even within. So basically, we created like a marketplace like Gigi, where students can sell their items, shoes, clothes, bags, secondhand items. Then we can also have outside sellers also sell, right? It was so interesting, right? We created that product. Myself and my co-founder, then Sumto Achu, also my twin brother as well, too. So that was like my first tech experience in terms of trying to build out the tech stack. Very, very great guy. Then I was like more focused on the business side of things. But we ran into our challenges then, largely like an unfavorable environment. I think the big challenge for us then was the fact that internet infrastructure was really, really poor back then, right? So people had... Mm-hmm. more pressing problems to attend to, right? When you have access to the internet, it's definitely not to shop for one of our students. Yeah. It's probably to study or to chat, right? So internet access was a big problem for us. And then just the environment was not just very favorable. So we quickly shut that down after a while. We didn't really try our hands on any of that thing again back in school, but it was a very, very good experience. It helped us get to know a lot of people, get to understand what it is like launching products. And then we said something, right, which is very, very, very interesting. So we decided to go an offline route back then in school. So there was this trade fair. We never made... I think we made a few sales online, connected a few people online, but in terms of like line of sight to revenue, it wasn't very clear for us like how we're going to monetize. But we decided to go an offline route of the business. So we had this trade fair coming up, and then a trade fair store would cost you like 20,000 naira, right? You want to get a store for trade fair. So we decided to get one big store for trade fair. I would say to everybody, you know what? Bring your things, we'll sell them for you. So we were just crazy. Man, it was crazy. Like, it was a hit. Like, it was a hit. Yeah. Like, people would bring their shoes, their bags. Like, in fact, we didn't even understand. We didn't think it would be a success. We actually did not think it would be a success. Mm. Like, we just wanted to just try something interesting. Girls were bringing their own shoes. Guys bought iPods. Like, instead of getting the whole store, right? We just, like, bring stuff, we'll sell them for you. It was crazy. And we sold. In the space of two days, we sold like 1 million naira worth of products in the trade fair. It was so interesting. And then we made like, our profit was like 10% of that, right? Like, we covered the cost of the store. We covered the cost of, tipping guys who are working with us at then, and also like making some extra bucks. Although the money was like stolen from me, but it's like people thought I was making money.
Do you have any suspects?
I have suspects. Don't worry. But I actually comforted the guy, but he agreed. So I also know Alasha. We fashioned him.
Oh man!
And then I just. So that experience was very, very interesting. It told me a lot of things, right? Particularly about like tech and how tech businesses are built, right? And it's real when you look at the success of fintechs, core fintechs versus agency banking products, right? Which are also fintechs as well too. Our market is a very low trust market. Our market is a very physical, market. So, you know, products that bridge a hybrid of online and physical, particularly if you're dealing with a mass market product or a mass market, like a lot of people don't understand, you know, some of the things that matter to product growth or like, you know, just tech business in general is you have to account for cultural nuances or cultural differences, right? Our market is very low trust. Our market is very, you know, people want to see, they want to experience, right? Beyond like, you know, the tech business we're currently doing right now, you know, at Katia Labs, mostly targeted towards digital workers and digital nomads, like, you know, yourselves and myself, like, who work for, like, tech companies. So we're more of like a, more like an advanced market, but, and then we're also trying to grow the space as well, too, but it's more of like an advanced market. So it's fine to do business completely online, right? But if I was in a mass market product, right, it's going to be a combination of offline channels, offline business, and you know, online business as well too. Right, that's how you can scale in this part, right, and have clear line of sight to revenue. So I think for us back then, you know, we would have found a way to continue, you know, the offline approach even beyond the trade fair because it was working, right? It was working, but very very interesting stuff. So I mean, I just continued in that line, right? At some point, I got into when I finished from uni, I got into corporate job. Mostly because you know I represented Nigeria in this competition and I got my first job then, got into a corporate banking job. It was very interesting. Like we did some of the most interesting work in Nigeria then, right? Like Access and Diamond Bank merger. Like we were the ones that were behind the Excel sheets that made it a reality. It was crazy.
I would like to dig more into that.
I want to ask a question. Why did they, you know, sometimes you want to transfer and to a Diamond or Access Bank, and then there's Diamond Bank or there's Access Bank, and then there's Diamond Access. I don't know.
It was a long haul to merge the both banks, right? You are merging a lot of things. Like when people see merger and acquisition, they think it's just as easy as the headline. It's not as easy as the headline, right? I mean, you're devs yourself, so you know that there's a lot of like, you know, back end stuff that needs to. Like, how do you merge the two systems? So you're merging culture, you're merging people, you're merging, you know, how they store their own data, how they structure their own database and all of that stuff. Like, it was a lot of work.
So if one bank has username field and the other bank doesn't have username field,
you can imagine.
Where do you start from?
It was a lot more work
like if you're merging two banks, right? You know those no banks like they are connected to like NIBS, right?
NIBS, yeah.
It means it's going to involve like having to change a lot of things. So I guess having Access Bank Diamond is just like a transition stage until they're able to.
So there's a lot. Then you know, culture, people. Access Bank. I mean, Diamond Bank had a lot of staff at then, so you had to retrench a lot of people. They are superstars, right? It was just a lot of work. It was a lot more than the headlines, right? But you know, glad I pulled through and you know, created the largest bank in Nigeria, one of the largest banks in Africa as well, to Access Bank. I use Access Bank myself, and you know, pretty.
They're currently showing people Shige shares, so I don't know.
Well, the last one month has been. Has been chaotic in the entire banking sector. That's one has been chaotic. Like, I don't think
I have two pending transfers right now.
In fact, I've given up. I don't even know how much I've lost. Like, I just hope the
investment. I don't know where the money is. The money has not come back to me.
I don't know.
It's just in the air.
Like, it's just hanging. Like, I feel like 50K or so that is just hanging all over the place. Like, one is with this bank. I don't know if it's the merchant that has not told me the truth. If it's another actually rich team, like it's just chaotic. But I mean, like nobody saw it coming in terms of the intensity and the speed at which the CBN was trying to move towards a cashless economy, right? So all of the systems were not well properly stress tested, right? And then you have the wave of a lot of the engineers who are working for these banks, like you know, being recruited by other tech companies like yourself,
especially in the abroad,
and then DACPA, like you know, so. Man. It was a nightmare, but it's also a good thing because you know these banks they don't want to pay properly, right? If you look at it, like, and these guys are making so much money, they declare billions of profits every year. I mean, they make fun of tech companies for being loss making entities. But the reality is, if they were paying as much as tech companies, their profit numbers would definitely come down. And you know, so
they go fill them.
So I saw those banks are they are crazy. I saw Access Bank ad the other day. They were saying start your tech career journey with us, and I'm like, which time Access Bank become tech company? when did Access Bank become a tech company? Like, it was so interesting. Like, it was so crazy. I was like, okay, instead of just going to actually employ tech people and pay them properly, they're looking to you know, start collecting like thousands of interns and pay them. Right, do you understand? Exactly. Can you imagine? So that they maintain their profitability metrics and all. But you know, at the end of the day, it's good, right? It creates a talent pool for you know, other companies to continue to poach from.
That's the thing with getting a lot of interns. They grow in your company and then eventually they leave. So speaking about Access Bank, tech companies and everybody, you know, let's try to demystify what valuation means. First of all, thanks for telling us about like your journey. It's really interesting. You know,
I didn't tell you how I actually landed in this point, but I mean, like maybe just during the session, we can definitely talk about it. It was an interesting ride. Like, I actually stumbled on a stroke of luck, right? So while I was in the bank, I interviewed for a PE company at the time, right? But I didn't take the job then. But I stayed in touch with the founder of the PE company, and then by the following year, he was founding his own tech company, and I was like, oh, this guy, let's work together. And that's like, as I landed into tech, it was just by accident, because I wanted to be.
It's not like you were coding or anything.
No, I wasn't coding. I was just this, you know, business smart business guy that can do everything from marketing to fundraising.
I just want to say, do you know how valuable you have to be for someone to want to start a tech company and you're not a programmer and they think of you.
Yeah,
like, you have to be very valuable as a person. Honestly,
It was the most stretching time of my one of the most stretching time of my career, actually, because like I had to learn really fast. Like you cannot not know what you're doing, right? I had to learn really fast. I had to sit on my feet. Like, we were jumping on calls every minute, right, with investors, talking about like what we're trying to do. Then that was Bungalow. A prop tech company, and you know, given how difficult it was to raise for prop tech, right, or to even, you know, sell a prop tech product, like
in Lagos,
like we're able to raise some funds from investors even before, you know, building out our product and all of that, right? Which I will explain. You know, a lot of people struggle with fundraising, and I think it's very good for me to talk about like what it takes to raise funds, right?
I'm interested in learning.
We're going to explore.
I struggle with fundraising too.
I can imagine. But I mean, it's not like it's not easy for anybody. Like that, but there are certainly, you know, some secret sources that, you know, who need to come to reality. Like, you know, at Catalabs, for example, we've been quite fortunate. You know, we've raised them. I can't disclose, but we are super product, but in a market that's as tough as we are in, where we've been able to raise an early family and friends round in six figures, right? So we're still coming up, right? So after Bungalow was very interesting, like, you know, from market entry research to hiring people to talking to investors, like just the whole stack of like being a CEO of a company, although I wasn't the CEO there, right? But I gained valuable experience. Then I got interested in crypto. It was 2021. I was in the airport coming back from Port Harcourt that day, and I saw Dogecoin trending. So I said, oh, you know what, I'm buying Dogecoin. So, and then...
Did you make profits from it?
No, I made so much money in that period from crypto. So I've seen my next field. So that's why I got into. I just like started to crypto companies to work for, and then I landed with Big Mama, right? You know, luckily for me, I got a good role, very strategic role as well too, that helped me to grow as well too. So we're able to raise funds for Big Mama precedes. Well, I don't know if you saw the announcement, but we're able to raise funds for Big Mama then. You know, our user base grew from 10,000 users to about 100,000 in 1 year.
Wow.
You know, there's a whole lot of work. And then we stumbled on a very, very big problem, which we're now solving, right? And the problem was very simple for me then. It was, I was earning in crypto, and needed a loan. I needed a loan against my salary, right? And there was no way for me to get that loan off my crypto salary. So I decided like, this is actually a problem to solve. It's actually like business to do. So, and then it started expanding. Like beyond loan, right? If you're a digital worker, if you're a digital nomad, if you're someone who is paid all cash, right? Whether crypto, fiat, or all of that for your, or you're someone who is paid all cash, right? You know, you're not paid in the traditional bank account where like it is Access Bank paying you on the 25th of this month. Like you're earning a digital wallet, you're using Wise, you're earning you know, via crypto wallets, right? You're a freelancer, remote worker, earning in USD, or you're just paying all cash. Like you don't have access to like traditional benefits when you think about it, right? You can't get a salary advance.
Like bank statements and all those.
Yeah, things. Bank statements, you don't have a pension, yeah. You don't have bank statements, health insurance. Like you have to figure out all of these things by yourself, right? So you have to start like, you know, moving money from this account to save there. What if there was a better way to save, whereas you're earning your money, it's deducted for you instantly, and then it's going to a 5-year pension plan for you that you can, you know, always, you know, lend against or leverage for other things, right? Get a bank statement, get access to automate your health insurance payments in any country in the world, right? In direct from your income, build credit score for you know, for loans, right? So that's what we're building today. So we're building Waka at Catcher Lab. Waka is our first product, right? Which essentially allows you to, as a digital nomad or a digital worker, to easily create a personal payroll for yourself, right? So you can earn in multiple sources, right? Earn in crypto, earn in Naira, earn in dollars, you know, remove money from your accounts like Payday, other wallets, all over the place. Aggregate it into one platform, one source, and then you're able to automate your benefits directly on it. So you can automate, remove 10% of every income coming in for the next 5 years, you know, deduct my health transfers directly here, you know, build credit score to get a loan when you need one, right? So it's going to be a full stack financial suite by the time we launch, you know, by the next quarter.
Do you have a waitlist already?
Yeah, you have the waitlist. So I would just dump the, it's usewaka.com. Right. So usewaka.com.
All right, so would include that.
The usewaka.com. So that's our first product at Catcher Labs. And then Catcher Labs is going to be building a range of products for the digital workspace. So then we're also launching a community. So we decided that before we go ahead to launch our product, we want to actually build a community of digital workers and digital nomads, right? So it's a separate service called Nomadi. So it's called Nomadi. So it's gonna be joinnomadi.com.
It sounds like an Igbo name.
I like it. Everybody says that.
No, Nomadi.
Nomadi. That's like ebovi.nomadi. That's gonna be it's going to be a community of digital workers or digital nomads wherever you are. So we're going to, for example, you know, you can host a virtual masterclass on, you know, anybody can volunteer to host a masterclass or teach a masterclass or join a masterclass, for example, on, you know, creating your own podcast like you guys are doing one now, you know, writing, starting your own newsletter or even technical courses, right? Or technical like stuff around like, you know, Kubernetes, this stack or this stack, like, you know, like one of foster those very meaningful connections, right, across like meaningful conversations. So we're having lots of Twitter spaces across engineering, product design, national business and finance, growth and marketing.
I like that. That sounds really fun.
Yeah, you know, so it's gonna be a combination of everything. Then we're gonna be having travels, right? So we already have a trip planned in May to Benin Republic and Togo, right? So members of the community can subscribe to those trips, right? We'll be having physical sessions, right? Like Social Nine, Social Mixer, in Lagos, Dubai, Accra, different cities as Spirit leads us. So it's going to be a call. We want to foster a very, very strong network. You know, unlike traditional work, right? You are able to have, you know, work colleagues, work buddies, but we're mostly at home, working from home these days in our own type of work, right? What if we could actually create that sort of experience, right? Beyond even just your work colleagues that you will talk to online every time, right? Or beyond even just your circle of friends. What if you could discover other people, other digital workers who have similar interests like you?
Definitely. I need that.
You know, you can even meet a babe from there. Say, who knows? Like, you know, so many things. But you know, the reality is that we want to be able to ensure that we harness the power of association, right? We harness power of association, like, you know, the people that you have around you on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, a weekly basis, they determine how far you go, right? So imagine if we could all be together, be in our places. Right. So that's what we're trying to do with Nomadi, right? So it's going to be a very, very interesting community. We're launching that this month of March, but towards the end of March. We initially wanted to launch earlier, but, you know, I think anybody that is launching anything right now, they're definitely going to fail because everyone is talking about elections. when you make your announcement, they will tell you it will be this. You know, you can't even
post your picture in peace on social media now. No, honestly, you can't post your picture. You don't include hashtag.
You're clearly not reading the room. So we're going to launch one week after elections for Nomadi, and then views work out much later. That's it. That's our journey so far.
Yo, Bobby took us on a ride, man.
Yeah, for sure. Like this is probably the longest introduction we've had.
Oh my god! The last time we had something like this, I don't know who were we talking to? Maybe Laolu or something. Or Bobby took us on a ride. But let's keep going.
Nice. So we're going to unravel more of that. So let's talk about what valuation means and how it's calculated for a startup.
Valuation. Valuation is the trickiest subject in VC and startups, right? Because there are so many nuances when you think about valuation. And I'm someone who has always been on the conservative side of valuations, right? I'm never crazy excited about ex unicorns and all of that stuff. Like, I just want my multiples. We invested at 2 million, we're now worth 10 million. That's 5x. I'm out.
Yo, that's real, man. That's real. That's real, right?
Well,
there.
Because the reality is, you know, reality and market is saying it, right? We have lots of companies who are not up to, you know, the valuation that they thought they were, right? It was, for example, at Qatar Labs, like we raised that the pre-money valuation of, 2 million, right? Some people would have raised that maybe 10, 15, but the reality is...
Is this dollars?
Yeah, dollars, yes. The reality is...
Be telling us in advance. That is dollars.
the reality is that, you know, you want to keep your valuation within check, right? You want to efficiently utilize the resources that you have raised, right? You want to explore non-dilutive sources of capital, right? Loans, grants, and all of the rest, right? So that you don't have to keep swelling valuation because you want to keep raising, right? Because when the market where people, we need to start seeing $50 million exits, $10 million exits, $20 million exits, $100 million exits. We are not going to have just $1 billion exits in this ecosystem at this point. It's right. Ecosystems grow. We need to start seeing mergers, right? But if the base of everything has been so high, then we are setting up ourselves for failure as an ecosystem, right? And even as founders, right? Because how many people are going to be acquired for 1 billion? I don't. How many 1 billion is out there looking forward to acquire? Like, you know, how many 500 million is going to be out there looking forward to acquire, right? Or even 100 million is even difficult to come by, right? But 30 million, 15 million, 10 million, 20 million, all these are good. Because, you know, we have been so carried away with the idea of fundraising and all of that, that people fail to realize that the end goal is always an exit. An exit happens either via IPO, a merger and acquisition, maybe a secondary sale, right? A fundraising round, a secondary sale, right? But if the base, if the previous valuation was too high, right, you know, you are going to be either have to take a down round, right? That is losing money for old investors, right? Almost all their money becoming zero or becoming not, right? That's what happens when the base is too high. So nobody gets anything. When the valuation is when valuation become too hot, everything busts, right? When the engine is too hot, everything busts, right? So I've been in an ecosystem where people without products, people without anything, are raising. I mean, Africa even tried. In the US, and I joined some stonk demos with somebody prepared up 70 million valuation. And I'm like, what's this? Right? You know, you see, and all of them, they're all flat today. Most of them are flat today, right? So valuations are really determined by, you know, largely comparables. First of all, comparables, right? Comparables mean that what's everybody else raising at, right? Because at early stage valuations are very arbitrary. They are very, like, if you like, plot all the Excel sheets.
Vibes, everything, right?
It's just arbitrary. It's vibes. There's no revenue. It doesn't make any sense. Like, you can basically make revenue of 5,000 monthly or even 5,000 yearly, and then the valuation is as much as 10 million. Like, it just doesn't make any sense, right, to think about early stage. Because most of these businesses are still figuring out themselves, pre-product market fit, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know that no matter how good and clear our idea sounds, reality is that by the time we actually launch and go to the market, there are things that we didn't expect, that we did not anticipate. That might call for a pivot, that might call for a rethink of our strategy and all of that, right?
I think launching products is synonymous with everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. That's how launching products are. Launching products is like, oh my God, we have users for this thing. I can swear to you. Everybody in Nigeria wants this. By the time you launch it like this, and your first week, nobody has signed up.
Yeah.
You'll see the reality. You know, that's why even for us, you know, we have spent so much time thinking about our go-to-market strategy. You know, a lot of founders, and I'll explain when it comes to fundraising as well too, right? Because one of the most important things is how do you intend to grow this business? Like, you know, people want to see that clarity, right? They want to see that clarity. How do you intend to make this work? They want to be sure that you have, you know, and I think that's one thing that has helped us, right? But we will save that for the question about fundraising, but valuations are arbitrary. How valuations are arbitrary. I think for a pre-seed, it's a combination of how much you want to spend to get to your next milestone and how much you want to be able to give off or dilute as what determines the valuation. And then maybe you give into things like hype, right? I think, you know, we saw some of those companies last year in Africa that we are going the hype route, right? Some of them lost money.
Is hype good or bad?
Is hype
a good thing or a bad thing?
Hype is always good in the moment. Hype is always good in the moment of the hype. But outside of the moment of the hype, 90% of the time is not good. 90% of the time is not good. But in the moment of the hype, it's like, oh, this is the guy. This is it. But when the hype dies, it dies. Right? Everybody's reality.
Hype is the craziest thing on Twitter. I'm not even going to lie to you. On Twitter, hype is the craziest thing. Hype makes you think that you don't know what you're doing with your life. That's what hype does to you. Hype makes you think, oh my God, what am I actually doing here? Look at all these crypto bros and
I thank God I'm one of those people.
It's crazy.
I'm one of those guys, like, you know, I don't know, maybe it was my training or my upbringing, but I've just never been moved by anything, right? I've never moved by public opinions, I hold on to my own views, my own thoughts, processes. Like, I'm never moved by, like, you know, what everybody's doing.
Mob mentality.
Everybody's doing AI now, like, everybody's doing this right now. Like, you know, I'm just never moved by any of these things. Like, we just move at our own pace.
I think finding a way to center yourself at each point is actually very important. So I really understand you saying, you know, valuations are, you know, at an early stage, they're more arbitrary than usual. Because, you know, it's like,
that's why you have to be very careful, right? You have to be extremely careful. Do not outprice yourself, because it is only arbitrary to a point. It is only arbitrary to your seed round or maybe to your Series A, right? By Series A, you need to start showing reality. If you had outpriced yourself, if you had overpriced yourself earlier on, and maybe you are lucky to get people to buy in at that, they will all lose money. They will all lose money.
Yes,
you have to be very, very careful.
These things are very nuanced. Anyways, so I want to know, like, you know, you mentioned some, I think you talked about Catcher Labs and, you know, you talked about raising money. You did a family and friends round, right? And I think that's your personal to you. But, like, in the real sense, like, I want you to, like, paint a picture for us, like, real life examples of how, you know, money is actually raised, right? Like, how do startups actually raise money? What are, like, the processes involved? The different ways in which, you know, it can happen, you know, capital, venture capital funds, investors, and whatnot. Like, you know, in your own experience, what have you experienced in terms of how startups raise money and, you know, the processes that it take to, you know, get that, even if it's the first raise, right? So
I'll be very pragmatic about this. Extremely pragmatic. I feel like anybody that wants to find a different type of capital, you're going to read something online in Wikipedia. But I'm very pragmatic about this one. How do you raise money? The first thing is that you need to first come to reality about, you know, the state of the business that you are in and what is the most suitable type of capital for that state of business that you are in, right? For example, if you're pre-product or your idea stage, all of that, the best bet of capital that you would get is not even, it's not, I mean, there are some idea stage grants, but even at that, it's nuanced, right? But the best form of capital you would get at that point is, you know, family and friends, angel investors, right? And the only way to raise money, I think that's the only way, right? Everybody else just
cats. Can you describe angel investors to, you know, people that are not familiar with?
I didn't tell you guys this, but somewhere in between our journey, although we have sort of like, I would say shut down things or slow down things there, we had this syndicate fund called Tribe Africa Community. Imamu was a part of I think you did one deal with us or you tried and you pulled out. but the reality is angel investors are individuals around you, right? Individuals who are willing to, who have money, right? You know, it can be as low as $1,000. Like all we're doing was at Tribe Africa, you know, young individuals like myself, devs, friends, everybody, we contribute as low as $200 sometimes, $100 sometimes, you know, and we can raise as much as $10,000 from everybody. I'll give to one startup fund one startup. Okay. We're able to fund about 100K to about, you know, several startups in total, one in Kenya and you know, a bunch in Nigeria as well. And they're all still alive still today. And we are still
my investment is still working.
We are monitoring and evaluating our portfolio. Right. So those are angel investors. Angel investors are individuals around you know, who can buy into
a vision very early. Now this comes my next question. Angel investor, is it like a job title? Because you see some people on LinkedIn, they're like, angel investor, software engineer, investing in early stage startups in Africa, you know, stuff. So people sort of make it their own personality. My name is David Chuka. I'm an angel investor, you know.
I think it's funny.
I think the angel investor is an adage. It's not. It can be an angel investor only. Because where's your money coming from?
If where's your money coming from?
Right.
Yeah, you have to earn
so, like 10k a month. Should probably
Hush Puppy was an angel investor.
honestly, I think it's fine to, you know, everybody finds themselves in different, you know, some people like titles or like to be hyped before they arrive, right? So everybody finds their reality in different things. So it's fine if somebody feels like, you know, putting that out there is what is, because we're in an age of discovery. That's the honest truth. I want to be able to tell all about, for example, if you couldn't find anything about me online, I don't think we'll be having this meeting, right? I want to be able to find everything about you as much as I need to know, right? If we're going to work together, if we're going to do stuff together, I want to be able to find out. And that boils down to how his funds actually raised, right? Who are you? That's the question. Who are you and who do you know? Simple. Just have to raise. That's the question about raising, you know, early stage funds. So I've met founders who haven't worked anywhere. Like, he just finished from university and they are building this product. Right?
Is that a bad thing?
well, the reality is that most times it doesn't work that way, right? Because you want to build a sufficient
reputation
network. Because first of all, most times growing business, right, comes from your experience, right? How do you know how to acquire users? Who knows you? For example, someone like me now, I can put out a wait list on Twitter today and I'll have 100 people sign up on it. Just me.
That's a huge flex.
Do you understand?
Everybody, we're just going to stop for a second to recognize that flex. Thank you so much for flexing on us. Thank you.
But, you know, you have someone who has no address, has no background, you know, doesn't know anybody. It just wants to raise money. How do I even vet you in the first place? How am I sure you can raise your next round? Right? These are pragmatic questions. These are pragmatic things to think about, right? How am I sure you can raise your next round? Who do you know? Like, you know, can you? Because most this is broken. Most investments happen by warm intros, right? You need one in. It's mostly business sharing deals among themselves, introductions, and then investing to somebody. Right, someone is helping you with structuring this out. So you need to be able to build that sufficient base of network and experience, because as I you know, because everybody makes decisions and has, you know, you go as far as you know in life, right? Right. There's a passage in the Bible where you know God was telling, was it Abraham, was that about as far as your eyes can see? The reality is that you go as far as you know. You go as far as your experience. Like, you have to keep chasing experience, experience. So that's why people are always. That's why you hear maybe this experienced founder has raised X amount of money at X amount of position. That's because he's an experienced founder. You can't blame anybody, but that's you know, he has built a network.
There's a founder on Twitter that sold the same product twice. I don't know if you know this guy. The first one acquired by Discord. The second one acquired by Meta.
The first one was acquired by Meta. The second one was acquired by Discord.
The same product. He just changed
the name. The same product, literally. you get, like, Nikita is someone that is known.
Yeah.
How many people have tried? Trust me, like, people have probably build product. Like, the man was just tweeting about his product every minute. He was building in public, building a great audience. Like, if he wants to raise money, people will definitely throw money at him. Like, so you need to be able to... It's one of the secrets of success. You need to be able to build an audience. You need to be able to build followership around yourself. Who knows you? You need to be able to build all of these things around yourself as a startup founder to be able to, you know, raise money and have the experience that it takes, right? To be able to know that there are other sources of capital, like, you know, for example, I had an investor who shared me this grant application, right? I would not have known about it, right? If he had not shared it to me, right? So you have all of these things to look at. Yeah.
Yeah. So you already said you know, the family and friends and the angel investor part of it, right? So I think you kind of said this in respect to early stage, you know, funding. So I don't know, should we keep going as we talk about, you know, more parts of funding, or because I don't think VCs are going to like pay attention to, you know, when you're really, really early stage until you have sort of some sort of revenue.
Sure.
Because you didn't mention that part of VCs, you know, playing their part in, you know, raising spending money. Because I know it's not angel investors that are going to throw millions of dollars at you or your family and friends. Your family and friends will only do their best. Right. And then
that's why you need to expand. For example, in our family and friends round, we had some VCs investing because they are friends. They fall under friends category.
Man, that's another huge flex. Let's just stop for a moment.
No.
To recognize that.
I don't take fundraising as a flex because it is an obligation to deliver returns.
Okay.
But yeah,
I don't have any VCs in my family and friends, sir. So until then, Emmanuel, you can be the first.
Yeah, man. So that's just it. So but the reality is that most VCs are very, very, you know, the truth is that there are a lot of deals that are done this way, where they just know you and they give you money without even looking at anything. Why? Because they feel like this person has the ability to grow a company and scale a team and deliver returns.
Yes.
Right. And most of the deals are done that way. Right. And the other side of the deal is where they have to look at metrics, you code email, then they take it through all of the whole process, step by step, calls, phone calls. You know, it's a mix of everything. Right. It's a mix of everything. But, you know, at that very early stage, you know, it's very advisable to chase other sources of capital, angel investors, grants, right? Because, like I said, raising money from VC is an obligation to deliver returns, right? It's nothing to celebrate about. I don't even know why it's there becoming like, headlines in our ecosystem, right?
Well, like that's when the real work actually starts.
Like the day we had some guys sign terms, you know, like, oh, man. Like I was cold for the whole day. I was like, man, shit is real, man. She's about to go down.
That's good now. The pressure has gotten worse.
Speaking of these news articles that publish raising money, this company raised this. There's always this part of the title that says like series something like series A, series B, whatever, right? Could you maybe shed some light on what those letters mean, and what kind of, like, is, does that affect how much can be raised, and what kind of companies, at what stage are they in for them to be in those different series?
Sure. So there are several stages of your fundraising journey, right? And the farther you go, the more capital you're able to raise. That's ideally, right? The farther you go, the more capital you raise, the more your valuation, if there are no challenges in between, ideally, right? So you start off as an idea or, you know, family and friends company, stage company. Then you move into a pre-seed. But, you know, at that idea stage, you're most likely raising maybe a max of 100K, maybe somewhere around a million in valuation. Then, you know, I always advise people to raise their pre-seed in like two stages as well. So you can actually combine your idea stage, family and friends, into everything into your pre-seed, right? And I think the best pre-seeds are the ones that do not raise at over 5 million valuation, right? So anything above 5 million valuation, you're almost setting yourself up for failure, right? Because it's, you know, SF is a very capital intensive business, and then there's this line of sight for so much money, right? So that's pre-seed for you. And then the next thing is seed, right? So seed companies, like how much do you want to, not, you're also looking at how much do you want to dilute, right? So I think, you know, 20% is healthy at pre-seed. So you're raising up to a million at 5 million. Right at pre-seed, right? That's 20% dilution. But the reality again is, you know, And I'm giving, it's actually what should be. Because we're in a market where people just raise all manner of funds, just $5 million per seed. At, like, how do you raise $5 million per seed at $15 million? Like, that is, you know, I'm not a doomsayer, but we've seen so many of them go to bust. We've seen so many of them go to bust because they are not capital efficient. They just go all out, hire 100 people at once. The founder is, you know, traveling from San Francisco to this to that. Or
It looks like Bobby has a personal beef with somebody that he does.
I don't have personal beef, but we need to start talking about these things. Yeah. Like,
that's why you're on the podcast. That's why you're on the podcast.
We don't talk about these things, honestly. So after pre-seed, so $1 million at $5 million, at $5 million, up to $1 million at $5 million. The next thing is your seed, where you're raising maybe up to $3 million at up to $15 million in valuation. This is actually a healthy fundraising path, right? So that you can easily be acquired. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to be, sold, right, and all of that. And then, after the seed, up to $3 million at up to $15 million. The next is probably a Series A, right? Series A's are usually like $30 million to $15 million in valuation, right? Because you're always trying to achieve 3x multiple in between every funding round, right? That's the goal, to achieve a 3x multiple in between every funding round, right? So you're raising your next $3 million at 15. You're now most likely trying to raise maybe up to $10 million at 50, or maybe. $8 million at 40, right? You know, at Series A, right? And then I think Paystack was one of those companies that went through this really healthy. You know, when Paystack exited at $200 million, a lot of people were like, "Hey, they sold too early." Hey, this people don't understand. Yeah. Exit is always the goal. If you have not exited, if you like keep raising money,
people fail to realize that actually. Mm-hmm. Generally.
Yep.
Generally, in the tech ecosystem, people were like, why did they sell?
Yeah, people were like, why did they sell? Right.
I think some people want you to build your company
perpetually. I think we have realized why they sold now. Like, bro, there's always an end to everything. There's always an end to every journey, right? And they sold at a good price. Everybody made money, right? It was a realistic fundraising round. I think the most they raised was about $13 million in total or so, or 10, right? In a capital efficient and all
that.
So they went to a healthy fundraising path. So then, you know, Series B also, like I said, they always tend to mark up 3x on every, on 2 to 3x on every funding round, right? That's always the goal. Or my computer on every funding round. So yeah, that's pretty much you know what a healthy. And then you need to be exploring. Sorry, in between, you know, you need to be exploring as many, because most times funding needs are usually more than you can raise, right? So you need to be exploring as many fundraising paths as possible, right? There's grant funding. One company that has done that very well. The one company that does that very well is Tribe Agric, right? Tribe Agric.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're always in the news for every other month for a new fundraising, for a new grant funding, right? So there are a lot of grant funding opportunities to take advantage of, non-equity based funding to look into. Early stage, I don't advise debt, honestly. Except you're lending or financing business where debt has direct line of sight, right, to utilization, right, that is non-operational, right? It is necessary to keep afloat, to make the business run. Not, I don't mean salary expense and cost, like, you need debt because you want to keep afloat, you need debt because you want to make transactions, card processing, all that thing work fast, you need debt because you want to lend other people. Now, those are debts that can be directly tied to effective utilization, not
the business itself.
Business itself, yeah. Right? So until you have clear assets, clear revenue, and all of that, you can now start taking debt against, you know, the business of business revenues and all of that, right? So that's mostly it, yeah.
That's interesting. So you've mentioned like pre-seed, seed, series A, maybe not series B. It seems like from series A
to that. at that point it becomes the big boys, right?
So I've heard once a company raised like series F or something.
Yeah, I think Stripe is somewhere around series J now or something. I don't even know. they're trying to raise a new round, right? And they took a serious markdown. They're trying to raise about 4 billion or so at 50 billion valuation. They took a serious markdown. You know, they were up to 100 billion at the height of, you know, the bull run, and then they have lost over 50% of their valuation, right? Or up to 50% of their valuation. So they took a serious markdown. Yeah.
Yeah. That's tough.
Yep.
I've never heard of Series J before. This is my first time.
I need to confirm that. I know they're quite fine. They're fundraising.
They're definitely fine. They are fundraising, but they're also, you know, funding some of the biggest startups in Africa. But that's a story for another day. I'm actually curious as to what industries get the most funding and why. Like, to you, what industries do you think are raising the most money right now? And why, right? You've mentioned Thrive Agric, always, you know, in the news for raising money. And there are not a lot of agricultural startups in the country, right, that are, you know, popular or part of the big boys. And then I've seen some that, you know, they did not really go as planned, right? Yeah, either they started off well and, you know, went under after a while, but like, that's just one part of it, that different industries and different types of startups in the continent, in Nigeria, right? One of the most popular ones being fintech. So what industry do you think, okay, if you are looking to raise money, like this is the surest banker now, go and, you know, get started with this one, for sure.
AI.
In Nigeria.
I'm just kidding. I mean, there was this Egyptian company that recently got acquired, Egyptian AI company. I think biotech or something. What was the name? But they recently got acquired by some, you know, European AI company, about $600 million. So yeah. But yeah, fintechs are usually. So the fintech space is kind of like, like I told you, like it's fairly overcrowded. Honestly, like you just have so many people trying out same thing in different form and fashion, right? You know, when we are raising, a lot of investors we are speaking to are like, man, this is the first time we are hearing something refreshing. Like it's always the same thing, you know.
You mean you don't sell recharge cards? <for your app>.
Honestly, it's better to raise something quite refreshing, because man, it's a market where you know, fintechs are everywhere. But you know, the reality is everything results on financial services. And that tells you why the market is such a big market, right? Every single thing revolves on financial services. So it depends on where you want to approach financial services from, right? So you can, and that's why Tel Agric is the entire approach financial services from an agricultural perspective. So they've been quite, you know, successful with that, right?
Successful.
So everything about financial services really. So it's still the largest space. The only thing that we'll be seeing right now is that people will be taking more sectoral approaches, right? You know, towards tackling financial services, right? So we're seeing financial services for restaurants. I think it was, is it other Africa? Like there are a number of companies that are taking more direct approach to financial services beyond the whole payment.
Okay.
You know, tackling this payment, for this sector, for that sector, and all of that, right? So you're also looking at the, you know, when it comes to our tech business, you're looking at the easiest route to build something that people want, right? Most people have natural problems that need to be solved around class sectors, right? That's just reality. So that's usually where there are a lot of like large problems, right? We're also seeing other sectors like the developer tooling space, right? Also sort of like gaining some interest. We saw Convoy last year raise some funds and, you know, right? There are a number of other spaces that are getting some interest in Africa. Health tech is attempting, you know, that big push as well too. Right, but it's mostly fintech right now. It's mostly fintech.
So it means if I was to start a new company right now, I should just
your best bet
build fintech. My best bet is for raising money.
I'm not giving you that. To build
another fintech.
The financial services, the financial services approach.
Yeah. So yeah, that's cool. So, if you've noticed throughout the episode, we've been talking about, when we talk about money, it's almost like it's only dollars we're referring to, right? Mm-hmm. And this,
nobody's raising naira again. Most of this
funding,
everything is in USD. Like everybody,
everyone's raising like in USD, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And which most likely means like they're raising from outside the country. So, what's the difference between raising foreign investments versus like raising locally? Because for sure there are local VC funds.
There are no local VC funds.
There are. I'm telling you. Venture capital. Capital? Voltron Capital?
Do you mean Nigeria?
There's
Nigeria.
A couple of them.
In Nigeria. I was just dragging local VCs.
Wait, what about Techstars?
I thought I was going insane.
I think Techstars, they're Nigerian as well, right?
No, there is. So he said he's joking, but they are local. They are local VCs for sure.
Yeah, they're a few local VCs.
Active. Yeah, I think you're using the word local wrong or something.
No, it's correct.
You're using the word local.
No, it's correct.
Are you sure?
Like Nigerian.
Just trolling.
they don't only fund Nigerian companies, they fund other companies in Africa.
Yeah. You know, the matter is, what we're talking about, you know, who are local and foreign VCs, reality is, the question we should be asking is, where are they getting their funding from? Right? Is it local sources or is it international sources? Right? Even some of the local fund managers, the African-based fund managers, that's why I said they are no local VCs. Right, because everybody's getting their funds from foreign. That's why everything is in USD.
There's no cash in Nigeria, Seth. So yeah. They can't
even. Most of the cash here is going into like bonds and T-bills and all of that, right?
Yeah,
most of the cash is going into all these other channels, right? So because they don't really understand the venture capital asset class, so it has been quite difficult for local fund managers. Like when I say local fund managers, Naira-based funds. On Naira-based pools, right, to be able to allocate money towards VC, like pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, and all of these funds, right?
Yeah,
allocating money towards VC for all of these companies has been quite difficult, but you know, it's just not their it's just not their fault, right? So most of these guys have had to raise money from international, you know, sources of capital as well too, and you know, most times when people are also funding VCs, right, they're also funding them in USD. Right, so it's quite tough to really say what is local funding or what is not local funding these days. But in a high level, we can keep it that if a VC is from Nigeria and is investing, then it's actually local VC. Let's keep it at a high level.
So essentially, it's almost impossible to hear about somebody raising, for example, 100 million naira. Like you will never see that in the headlines.
Maybe from family and friends.
No, like the thing is, you will not see the value that they're raising in naira in the headlines.
Even if sometimes
they could be raising in naira, is there such a case where
Benjamin Dada will convert it first?
They're not who raising
before
naira.
You post it.
They're not who
raising naira. It in the headlines.
They're not who raising naira, but you will not see it. It's not headline. Mostly not headline worthy. Most times.
So Bobby, what would you like to see more and what would you like to see less in respect to raising in the tech ecosystem, right?
I think less hype around fundraising. Less hype around fundraising. Less hype around fundraising, really.
Mm.
And less hype. More building.
It feels like Nigerians like to talk a lot.
More building. There's fintechs are trying, but you know, I really like Moneypoint. I like TMapped, right? They're doing the groundwork. We need more fintech apps to do the groundwork. Like, we need more fintech apps to do the groundwork. You know, I miss my... While I was in my last role, I was also CEO of Changera App. One of the things that we tried doing was we were beginning to explore offline marketing channels, right? Agency marketing, being on the street and all of that, right? We need more fintechs doing this. We don't have to crack critical mass. If you don't have a branch, you need to be seen physically somehow. Either through a billboard, either through an agent, either through all of that. Of course, you don't have a branch. Right, we're in a low trust economy, so we need to adopt and build for these cultural nuances.
I think you know, when you earlier mentioned that, it actually made a lot of sense, because most of these tech companies, they build a product, and when they're building, they just completely forget that there are some people that don't have smartphones in Nigeria. Like, those ones are not
even the ones that have smartphones. Trust me, like, it's trust. Trust happens when I can see you. Trust is the first one I can see you physically.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's why most like business now, deals are done physically.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, now the money that is hanging in the air from my two banks that just happened recently. I can't see the money. I've lost trust. All right. Well, man, thank you so much, Bovi. That really makes a lot of sense. Also, I'd like to know what you'd, advice you give to a first-time founder right now, you know, in the tech ecosystem. Like, you know, what build, advice would you give network. To...
Build your network.
Build your network.
Both for fundraising and both for user acquisition. Build your network.
Okay. I didn't tell you this, but the first time I think I saw you on social media. you're going to laugh. You were getting dragged for a comment. I think you were still working at Changera at the time. So I think you tweeted something, and then you were getting dragged for that tweet. You're getting dragged, and then it came on my TL. And I opened the profile. I was like, oh, this is Bobby now. Oh, what did
I
you
was
do?
Dragged,
I think I remember that tweet.
I can't remember the tweet, but they dragged the shirt. They almost tore it. Don't worry. We're not going to talk about the tweet. All right, Bobby, we're rounding up the episode and we wanted to do something fun.
Yeah.
I want to do something fun. So just imagine Emmanuel and I are founders, and you know, you meet us in the elevator, and that's why it's called an elevator pitch, right? So we'd like you to, just like they asked rappers to freestyle on the show. I said founders, we're investors, sorry. Emmanuel and I are investors. So I like you to give us like a 30-second elevator pitch. I don't know, you can sell literally anything to us right now. And you have to convince us to invest in your company in the next 30 seconds to 1 minute. So, are you ready? I'm about to start counting down. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
3, 2, you can sell anything. We don't care what it is, right? Just convince us to invest. 3, 2, 1, go.
I want to start a franchise for drink distribution, and this is one of the best drinks in the market out there.
I'm not convinced. Why? Yeah. Why?
But,
why is it the best drink?
For real. Let me be serious. I think every opportunity I have, Alexa, I ask myself, so what we're actually building at Catalab, every opportunity I have. But the reality is that work has changed. like work has changed. People are no longer earning tied to employers and employers anymore, right? I can work multiple jobs today. I'm sure you have like multiple gigs running where like sometimes you have this freelance stuff and all of that, right?
Yes,
you know.
Yes,
but the reality is that all of these do not count towards anything for me. They don't count towards any financial services for me, towards my credit score, towards my pension and all of that. What if they could actually count, right? So we are building the stack that allows you to aggregate all your income sources across different you know, types of income, right? And then you're able to automate your benefits and also build credit score for that.
Wow.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. That wasn't bad. Thank you.
Yeah, that was good.
I'll tell my people to talk to your people. Yeah.
I'm writing a check of $10 million.
All right, Rory. One last question before we finally round up the episode. We usually ask this to all our guests, and it's a very simple and short question. What would you be doing if you never got into tech? You know, you never got that Access Bank thing. You never, you know, got that person to, you never worked in the prop tech bungalow. You know, what would you be doing? What do you think your life would look like right now if you never got into tech?
Man, I'll be a trader. I'm very sure I'll be a trader. In fact, up to this year, I had plans to start wine distribution across Southeast and South. Up to this year. I will still go back to it. Honestly, I just need this to work first. I will go back to it. I'm going to be a trader, importer and exporter.
you fit the description, man. Thank you so much, man. We really appreciate you coming on the show. This was a really fun and insightful episode. You know, we learned a lot. Thank you so much for gracing us with your presence.
Yeah,
great.
Thank you so much for inviting me as well. It was a good time. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Remember, we release new episodes every other Wednesday, and you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. If you would love to connect with us, you can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Inside the Techos, or subscribe to our newsletter and shoot us an email at InsideTheTechosystem@gmail.com. We love hearing from our listeners. You can follow the host on Twitter as well, Chuka at CYDUGU and Emmanuel at Olaoluwa_98. All right, see you in the next one.